Welcome to the Self-Care Spotlight, presented and inspired by The Journal Deck, a product and brand rooted in self-care and living your truth. Hi, I'm Melissa Cousins, your host and The Journal Deck creator. On this podcast, I'm inviting you to a lifestyle, a way of being, where self-care has nothing to do with being selfish. In fact, we believe that we can give more to others when we give first to ourselves. On the Self-Care Spotlight, it's not just about bubble baths and massages, but getting to the heart of what it really means to live your most aligned life against the backdrop of everyday life. Through my solo episodes and interviews with inspiring women who are just as likely to meditate as they are to curse, the goal of this podcast is to empower you to unapologetically make space for you to live your best life. And remember, self-care can change the world by changing yours first. Are you ready? How do you live slow in a fast-paced world? How can you possibly keep up if you're moving slow? What would a good minimalist do? Where's a good place to start? How do we get off the treadmill of life? And can you bend time? All of these questions and more are coming up right now. Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Self-Care Spotlight, and happy February. We are here for our monthly episode for the month of February. We are back, and to my astrology junkies out there, happy new moon in Aquarius. If you're listening to this on the week or even the day that it was released, if you're listening on Tuesday the 5th, that means yesterday, February 4th, was the new moon in Aquarius. So happy new moon, happy fresh start, happy February. February to me is also the month of love, right? It's the month of love, self-love, all the things. You're going to hear a lot about that this whole month from like everywhere. So while that's amazing, and those are awesome topics, love, self-love, relationships, all the things, yes, yes, yes. The theme that we're actually going with in JD land, in Journal Deck land, is we're actually going to take that topic of, you know, February and love and Valentine's Day. And for me, what I think of when I think of all that, for some reason, I think of Aphrodite, the Greek goddess of love and beauty. And then from there, I think of feminine energy versus masculine energy. Meaning, you know, in modern Western society, we are kind of dominated by the masculine energy, even as women, even as people who identify as female. We're kind of pushed down our throats that to be successful, you need to act like a man, that you need to have more masculine type energy, meaning it's like go, 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 do, do, do. It's very action oriented, very goal oriented. It's burning yourself out. It's, you know, being busy for the sake of being busy. And that somehow the more busy you are, the more successful you are, that somehow means that you're better. There's a lot of comparison and shoulding and measuring up and all those things. So that's the society in Western society that we live in, right? The feminine energy that I want to theme the whole month off of, and which kind of works into today's conversation with our guest, Brooke McCallery, feminine energy is really the opposite. And that's not to say that it's better than, because there's good and bad. There's good and there's shadow side to both energies. And these energies, by the way, don't mean male, female, okay? It's not according to gender. We have both energies inside of us, no matter how we identify gender speaking. So this is simply about saying that feminine energy is, while still very powerful, because it is, it's super powerful. It has a lot of creative energy to it as well. I mean, you know, a creative, like powerful woman when you see her, right? And you're like, whoo, she's a force of nature. But for this month and today's episode, really, as an extension of that, we're focusing on the side of the feminine that is a bit more soft rather than the fierce part, and more intuitive, thinking softer, surrender, trust, slowing down, that less can be more, intuitive, intentional. These are all words that I want to work with on that softer side of the feminine energy spectrum. Again, not saying that that means women are weak. That totally is not what I'm saying. But right now, instead of working with that powerful, fierce side that can be feminine energy, I want to work with the softer side, the side that is more intentional, more slower, more surrender, more trust, that I think we as a society, whether you are male or female, could really use some help with embracing. Because as I said, it's thrust down our throats that success is about having more and doing more. And it's not always that way. In fact, today's guest, Brooke, she talks a lot about, you know, that slow living, simple living, whatever you want to call it, it's this paradox almost of like having more and having less, carrying more and carrying less. And so I think that this is just going to be an episode today that is going to help you just to see things in a different perspective. I really think it's going to inspire you a lot. It's going to have some really good key questions that you can actually take into your life, walk away from this conversation, and, you know, write in your journal about and get clear on, like, how can you start to embrace slow living and what that means. And I think you'll 100% be more clear of what do we mean when we say slow living, and as an extension of that, what do I mean when I say that's like embracing the more feminine energy side versus the very masculine, typical action-oriented, do, go, mindset that we are very used to here in our Western culture. So that's kind of where the whole theme of the month is going. So with that being said, in the journal deck land, we are focusing on the Goddess Edition deck. So that's the deck that is deck number 2 that came out last year after the OG deck. It's the one that's more of like the teal and the pink versus the teal and the purple, if we're going color-wise. And it is all about rediscovering the goddess within and embracing your feminine radiance. There's all these journal prompts on all things feminine energy, on the divine feminine, on archetypes, i.e. goddess archetypes, moon phases, even the menstrual cycle. There's questions about honoring that part of the female-specific body. So it's a really amazing, beautiful, healing deck, a card deck full of journal prompts that are just tailor-made to help you embrace that whole feminine side of you and get more in touch with it, because I believe it's suppressed in our society as a whole. And it's a really well-received deck. I think it's a really healing deck. I've had people say that. And I'm really proud of it. Really, really proud of it. And if you're interested in knowing more about that, of course, I'll have the link to it in the show notes for you to take a look and see what it's all about and how pretty it is and what it looks like and some examples of the prompts and such. So with that being the theme and that being the deck, therefore, of the month in JD Land, the Goddess Edition deck, the news that I want to update you guys on is that if you, in fact, are from my hometown of Pittsburgh, the happening that's going on this month before we get into the show is that I cannot let you go without letting you know that if you're from the Pittsburgh area or you would possibly live close by in the surrounding region and want to drive in, we are having our very first holy moly journal deck workshop ever. And guys, this is huge. This is goals alive. I know. So here we are talking about feminine energy, and then I'm bringing up goals. The masculine goal-oriented. So you need both, right? It's not one or the other. You need both energies. And this is major goals alive for me. This is a lot of that trust and surrender of the feminine, but also a lot of work and action has gone into making this manifestation of this goal come alive. And I've wanted to lead journal deck workshops since I created the journal deck And now we're finally doing it. I'm finally making it happen. And I'm starting in my hometown of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And it's on Sunday, February 24th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Ohm Lounge. It's a yoga studio here in Pittsburgh. And the workshop is called Living and Leading from Your Feminine Power. If you want to hear more about it, of course, I'll put the link into the show notes. Tickets are $25. And you have to get your tickets ahead of time on the Ohm Lounge website. And we're going to do intuitive dance. It's going to be a good guided class. And I cannot wait for that. Even if you can't dance, you're going to dance. We're, of course, going to be looking at the goddess deck and journal prompts. Lots of discussion, talking about the benefits, the science of journaling. What is feminine energy? What do we mean by that? How do we live and lead from that space? There'll be a pop-up shop. There's a heart-centered meditation. And this workshop, Living and Leading from Your Feminine Power, I actually would love to preface here that workshop in and of itself, I am taking that workshop on the road. I have two workshops going on the road, that one and then one called Living Your Truth, which is based on the OG deck prompts. And they're going on the road. We're officially booked in Atlanta, down in Georgia. We're booked in Columbus, working on Cleveland. And I'm also working on the DC area with a women's networking group down there. So yoga studios, boutiques, networking groups, so many spaces that JD, if you think it could be a good fit, please reach out to me. Let me know. Shoot me an email at info@thejournaldeck.com. And I would love to hear about your studio or a boutique that you think's a good idea to have an event at, or a group that you think the JD workshop would be a great fit for. I'm all ears. So again, info@thejournaldeck.com. And if you are in the area on February 24th, it's a Sunday, 5 to 7, then come hang out with me. Come dance with me. Come journal. Come connect with me. And I cannot wait. Okay. So, as I said, I digress here. Long-winded intro. I think that's kind of how these podcasts are from now on, by the way. It's going to be so we're only doing once a month, right? So there's going to be this intro portion, updating you guys on fun stuff, and then also getting into the show, of course. So how does this goddess deck, how does it tie into today's show? Well, I assure you it does. As I said, it's this idea of slowing down, softening, intentional living. These are all key words to feminine energy. And Brooke McCallery, my guest for today, is all about moving away from this very masculine do, 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 go, 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 consume, consume, consume approach to life, and instead advocates for slow. She has a new book called Slow, Simple Living for a Frantic World. It's beautiful. And she's also the co-host of the wildly popular podcast, The Slow Home, with her husband, Ben. And kudos to them. They just celebrated, are you ready for this? 5 million downloads. That's amazing. Kudos to you guys. Guys, honestly, she's the real deal in all things spacious, slow living. And I was beyond honored to have her on the show. She is, without a doubt, one of my favorite guests to date. This conversation is so legit. I didn't think I was even going to get a chance to talk with her. I had originally reached out to her all the way back in July of 2018 before she had started her book tour. She, on Instagram, agreed that she would be on the show, said, give me an email. I did. And then I got this autoresponder that came back saying, due to the vast amount of emails that we're getting, we're not taking, any new podcast bookings or anything like that. And basically they're swamped because she was on book tour with her husband and her two kids. And I was like, no, I can't believe that. I waited too long. I should have emailed her sooner. And now she's totally booked. And this sucks. But it ended up that it worked out. So there's that feminine. You got to trust that if it's going to work out, it's going to work out. And I just kind of let it roll and let it go and was like, if she's meant to reach back out, she'll respond to it and we'll do the episode. And if not, then it wasn't meant to be, and that's okay. She's off doing amazing work in the world, and I get it. You don't have time for everything. You know, talking about slow living and being a part of that community is about boundaries and saying no so that you can say yes to what really matters. And I was just really grateful that she was able to and wanted to say yes to being on the Self-Care Spotlight. So, Brooke, thank you again for doing that. And with all of that being said, I think you guys are going to absolutely adore this conversation on all things slow living. And let's go ahead and get on to the show. And with that, welcome, Brooke, to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. So as I was kind of hinting to you, Brooke, before we officially hit record on this conversation, I said the word spaciousness. And so the reason that I'm like, well, I'm excited you're here just because like your book's wonderful and your podcast is wonderful and all the things, but spaciousness has been my word of 2018.
It's a good word.
Yeah, right? And
yeah.
I declared it in January to my podcast, and I was like, my word is spaciousness, because I was lacking space. And to me, that has everything to do with like slow, mindful living is space, it's presence and intentionality and all of those things. So I'm just really geeked to be able to sit down with someone who is just so immersed in all things slow and spaciousness. And I've just kind of been fangirling on you, and you know, I'm just pumped that you're here. So again, thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. It's and I couldn't agree with you more, actually. I think that slow living really is about creating space for the things that are important to us, which mm-hmm. is, that's what it is to live with intention. That's what it is to live mindfully. You know, it's paying attention to our values and then gradually creating the space in which we can live closer and more aligned to those values.
Absolutely. So with that being said, all things space, you just got back from finishing, which I love that it was called the Slow Book Tour. I know it's like a little play on words, and it's your book is, you know, the book we're discussing is called Slow Living. And I just thought that was, I like plays on words, so I love that.
Thank you. We really tried very hard to go into the whole book tour with that sense of, okay, this is going to be intense, but how do we create slowness anyway? You know, and it was a really interesting experiment actually about how to find space for slow in amidst what was actually quite a busy and intense period. And it was busy and intense, but it was wonderful to see how even small acts of slowing down can have such a huge mm-hmm. impact on, you know, the way we live. Because I did the book tour with my husband and my two kids as well.
Yes, yes. And yeah, that was actually one of my first questions, honestly, was how did you manage to, I mean, keep that mindfulness while doing all of this traveling? Like, you're out of your daily routines, you're not in your home. Like, how did you do that?
With a bit of trial and error, I will say. But I knew from the beginning, really, that I would need to completely reevaluate my rhythms and my daily rituals. Because in an ideal world, on a perfect day when my kids sleep in until I want them to, I can get up maybe and have an hour to myself before the day starts. And in that hour, I will do a combination usually of either some meditation or some yoga, or you know, sit down, have a coffee, and do some journaling. Like, never do I get to do all four of those, but sometimes I might get to do one or two. And that just wasn't necessarily going to happen when we're on the road. You know, sometimes we're in a hotel room, the four of us, sometimes just in a little Airbnb. So it was a matter of kind of getting into the kernel of what those practices offer me, and figuring out how to find the same, you know, vital element of slowness, but in maybe a 5-minute grab, or something that I could do while we're in the car, or completely renegotiating what slow looked like for a few months and finding space for that instead.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I mean, it was challenging, of course, because I like my morning rhythms. I've set them up that way because they work for me. But it was also really wonderful to play around with that, I guess, and experiment with what can work, you know, given time constraints or space constraints.
Absolutely. And I, you know, I read also the book, Soulful Simplicity by Courtney Carver. And I know you know who she is.
I do. I love Courtney. It's such a wonderful book.
Mm-hmm. That was actually like one of my like big books that was like a catalyst, honestly, for this change. I read it on vacation. It's not very much, I don't know if it's a vacation book, but I read it on vacation in Aruba. And I just was like, oh, I get it. I just, I need this in my life. And anywho, but she talks about, you know, that idea of, like you just said, well, I can change things. And like, maybe it's just 5 minutes. I can't do an entire hour, but I can do 5 minutes. Like that you know, you can switch things. And it's like, instead of shoulding on the morning rituals or the routines, like how can you, like you said, experiment? And it can be in flux. Like it doesn't have to be so rigid. And if it's exactly. so rigid, then it takes the, like the whole point out of it.
Exactly. And then it just becomes a chore, right? And we constantly feel like we're failing if we're not living up to what we think it should look like. You know, mm-hmm. people are like, I don't have time to meditate because I don't have an hour. I'm like, well, it doesn't need to be an hour. And maybe you don't need to meditate. Maybe you could turn making your cup of coffee into a mindful moment every morning and let that be enough for now. Mm-hmm. Because that's the time that you have. And I think it's, that idea of shoulds and expectations is a really interesting one. And I think there's so much, you know, internal comparison tied up in it, what we think it should look like to live a slow life or what it should look like to live mindfully as opposed to what works for us.
Absolutely. And we are going to get into the shoulds because I know your book talks about like the shoulds and the Joneses and all the things. But before we do that, I just want to ask you because I know that you just wrapped up all of this, the slow book tour. How's your heart doing, Brooke?
Oh, that is a good question. You know, I knew that I would have a period of burnout at the end because regardless of how much I tried to keep slowness in our days, it was emotionally very intense, wonderful, but intense. And we got back, so we're now staying in a place in the Canadian Rockies for a couple of months, and this was sort of our slow end to the year, and that was the goal we were working towards. And I thought the first week or so might be me just recovering, but what I found was that I was in this fight or flight mode, you know, much more than I expected, and it has taken me a solid 3 weeks to even start to unravel how I was feeling. Because I mean, I went through a lot of changes and learnings as well during the whole process. I met so many people and it was so heart filling to meet them and talk with them and, you know, hear about their own journeys. And I think I'm only just starting to really dive into that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. I can only imagine. How many cities did you do?
It was around 40 across both the US and Canada. And we were on the road for 5 months.
Wow.
Our kids are 7 and 9. So, I mean, they're a wonderful age. They have that level of independence where they don't need us to do every little thing for them. But, you know, but they're in school and my husband's working full time and I was, you know, doing the book tour stuff. So there was a lot going on.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, well, thank you for sharing that. I figured, you know what? I'm going to ask her, how is your heart?
Mm-hmm. It's full, but it was fluttering for a while there.
Yes, yes. Okay, so let's talk about this book. Okay, so your book, Slow Living, Simple Living for a Frantic World. It is a beautiful book, I must say.
Thank you.
Beautiful book. And it says, this book is an introduction to the foundations of slow living, intention, simplicity, mindfulness, balance, connection, and enough examples of tiny imperfect actions to encourage you to begin the journey. The foundation of slow remains the same, a return to high quality basics, a reevaluation of the largely unnecessary must-haves of modern life, and a focus on going small, local, and community-based. It's a call to humanity, our connection to each other, and all that we have to gain by opening our eyes. It's an invitation to live, not just exist. So, Brooke,
yes.
Why did you want to write this part memoir, part self-development book?
I mean, going back sort of 7 years, my life, I was the exact opposite of slow and mindful. I was burning the candle at both ends and in the middle, and I was living completely mindlessly. I had a really good life, and I was surrounded by great things and enough good people and good relationships that I should have felt content and fulfilled, but I didn't, because I was always focusing on the next thing, you know, the next rung on the ladder, the next thing I should achieve, the next thing that would make me appear successful. And I'd get that thing, and then I'd find that hiding behind that thing was another thing that I actually really obviously needed. And, you know, it was this cycle of running myself into the ground in order to get the next thing. And then I was diagnosed with severe postpartum depression after our second baby was born. And that was really the catalyst, or the beginning at least, for me making these changes, realizing that I had to slow down. But the thing that was really interesting, and I find it interesting now looking back, I had in mind that this idea of slowing down, simplifying, doing less was a failure, you know, because I'd look around and I would see everyone competing on how busy they were and how sleep deprived they were and how much they had in their calendars. And here I was kind of feeling like I was being forced to slow down, and maybe that meant that there was something wrong with me. Mm. And mm-hmm. I mean, I knew that it was the right path. It was really the only way that I could go, because my mental health was appalling and my relationships and my physical health had really suffered because of it. So I started slowing down and writing about it, and gradually I became aware that I was not the only person wanting to make these changes. And I also realized that everyone who wanted to was feeling the same way I did. They thought that there was something wrong with them. So that's really why I wanted to write the book, to share my personal story. And, you know, my story of postpartum depression has definitely connected with a lot of people, but also just to share the story of what it's like to kind of live counterculturally when everyone else around you is rushing and acquiring and climbing ladders and doing all these things that they feel like they should be doing, and I'm opting out. I think it's really helpful to share what that's like in reality. So that was what drove the book.
I find it so interesting, like that word, like you use, it's countercultural. The fact that, you know, it's just, I guess, I don't know if the word is, it's funny or ironic, that that's like the, how do I say this? Like, it feels like it's a shame that it is that
way. Yes, it does, doesn't it?
You know, it seems almost backwards. Like, wait a minute, why is this like, it to me is like how people call new age, like Reiki and yoga and meditation. They'll say it's new age medicine or, you know, and I'm like, right. Is it really that new? It's actually ancient. I'm not so sure that it is.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it is, you know, a return to things that make sense, that intuitively mm-hmm. make sense. You know, I'll talk to people about it, and people who are skeptical or even cynical about slow living, and I'll sort of describe what it's about. And almost always I get a similar kind of reaction where people sort of drop their shoulders and they kind of exhale and they're like, oh, that's what I need. And it speaks to some deep seated requirement, I think, for us to all just take a bit more time and create a little more space. But because we live in the world that's fired by constant connection and consumption and everything else, it feels countercultural, even though what it actually is intuitive, I think.
Right. Yeah, that's well said. You said it. You just said it a lot better than I was. But you did just write a book on it.
So. Exactly. Yeah, I've had a few of these conversations recently.
Yeah, exactly. So how do you like to describe it? Like if someone says off the street, oh, and they say, what do you do? And you say, oh, I'm like an author and I have a podcast on slow living. And they go, well, what's that? What do you mean? Are you just moving slow? What do you mean you're moving slow?
Yeah, exactly. It's I always struggled with this for the longest time, because there was so much I wanted to include in my answer. But really what slow living is about is more and less. You know, it's this strange kind of dichotomy of caring more about the things that are important to us and caring less about the things that aren't. And, you know, when you kind of put it that way, people are like, okay, well, what are those things that I care more about and what are those things I care less about? And it just starts the conversation or the thought process where we start to really weigh up where our time and our energy is going. Is it going into those more things or is it going into those less things? And that was my realization, you know, way back. I knew what was important to me in life, you know, my family, my kids, having a positive impact on the world. But when I sat back and looked at how I was spending my days, I wasn't living like I knew what was important. So really, it's not about any kind of external, you know, the optics of it. That's not important. You don't need to live in a tiny home. You don't need to wear all, you know, natural fiber clothes. You don't need to meditate for an hour a day or anything like that. It's about figuring out what your personal values are and then living according to that, creating space by removing the things that aren't important or that aren't worth your time and your energy. And that's where it's just practical. You know, they're practical strategies and tools that you can start to incorporate into your life that creates that space. And in that space is when we start to focus on the more.
Yeah, I love that. I love the way that you said that too. Like, you know, it's caring more, caring less. You have this whole, I mean, I love paradoxes. I'm obsessed with paradoxes. I think that life is full of them.
Absolutely.
And talk about balance. I think that just there's somewhere in the middle with everything. It's not one or the other. And you're right. Like slow living is a curious mix of being prepared and being prepared to let go, caring more, caring less, saying yes, saying no, being present, walking away, doing the important things, forgetting those that aren't, grounded and free, heavy and light, organized and flexible, complex and simple. I love that. And, you know, okay, so if someone, would you say, like, in your opinion then, if someone is concerned about not keeping up in the fast-paced, frantic world, like, I gather you would argue that you would actually show up and keep up, quote-unquote, even better, yeah?
Yeah, I think that for the things that are important to us, slow living actually gives us the time and the energy to give more, you know, to the things that are our values, whether that is, and it's probably a combination of, you know, the work that we do, whether it's in the home or out of the home, it's the way that we raise our families, it's the kind of partner we are, it's the kind of friend or sibling or child we are, all of those important things, which are almost always centered on people and relationships and community. And I can speak from my experience, but I can also speak to the number of people who I've spoken with over the past years, that you're better able to show up for those things when you let go of the other stuff. You know, when you stop worrying about keeping up with the Joneses in ways that aren't fulfilling to you, you know.
Right.
The trends, the furnishings, the car, the house, whatever it may be. Letting go of that kind of stuff, letting go of comparisons and shoulds, frees up so much headspace and heart space to do the things that are actually important.
Absolutely. I thought of it and I thought I could just imagine someone saying, well, how am I supposed to keep up if I'm being slow? Like,
right. Right. Exactly.
Like, it sounds like counterintuitive. You're like, wait, it doesn't sound like it makes sense, but I know exactly what you're saying. Like, I get it.
Yeah. And that's the thing that kind of surprised me, I think, because initially when I'm like, well, I guess I have to slow down, I equated slow with boring and mediocre and average and, you know, lackluster. And it's proven time and time again that it's the opposite. I mean, my life is richer and deeper and more fun and more exciting and more interesting because I've chosen to slow down. And I think it's got to do with the energy and the depth that we're able to dive into things, because a relationship, like a conversation, for example, you could have a 10-minute conversation where both people are kind of not really there, you know, they're distracted, they're thinking about other things, maybe they're checking their phone occasionally, and that's not fulfilling. Even though that might be the only 10 minutes you have to catch up with your mum for the week, that doesn't feel fulfilling. But if you put down the phone, if you removes the distractions. And if you choose to turn up completely and you actively listen and you are thoughtful and mindful with your responses, that 10 minutes feels so much different to the 10 minutes where you're kind of not really there. And I think that's why it works, because it allows us to be fully present in what we're doing, and you get more out of it and you can give more back as well.
Yes. To me, that almost sounds like, I like to think of that as time bending, when you're right. Like, well, that 10 minutes just felt so much more. I mean, obviously you're not really bending. I don't know that you're really bending time, so to speak, but I'm kind of really curious about this idea of exactly that. Like, time doesn't change, you know, time is time. Like, it's 24 hours, whatever, in a day. And yet, don't you feel like on the days when you actually are moving slowly and intentionally, it feels like somehow you're able to get everything done.
Yes.
And you're like, why don't I always do this? When I hurry, I don't, like, it feels like you're bending time. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I love that. That's a really cool way of thinking about it. I mean, we're not technically stretching minutes, but it feels like it.
It's perspective.
Yeah, exactly. And it's attention and energy, mm-hmm. You know, and I do this myself still, even though I know better, like, I will sit down to work and I will flutter between tasks. You know, my email may be open while I'm trying to write something, and then I'll get a notification on my phone. And again, in a perfect world, I wouldn't have any of those notifications flashing, but sometimes, you know, that's the reality. And I won't get done nearly as much in an hour because my brain is constantly flitting between three or four different tasks than I would if I just sat down and did the writing task. Mm-hmm. And that's much the same. You know, you're bending time, you're making those minutes count.
Yes. Yes. So what do you say then, like, to people who go, how am I supposed to find time for slowing down, Brooke? Like, I don't understand. How do I find time to slow down? And, you know, that idea of, again, shoulding on, am I doing slow right? Like, or am I making myself feel guilty because I'm not doing a good enough job at being slow? It's just another item on my to-do list. I just see all these questions that would just be like, bing, 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 for someone who's in that place of just like, they're anxious about it. They know mm-hmm. that it's the answer, but it's almost like, it feels like a should, it feels like another to do. I don't know how I have time to do this. Am I doing it right? Like, what do you like to tell people just to be like, woo-saw, let's take a breath. Like, what do you like to say in those moments?
Yeah. I think that when we're operating at 110%, it's really hard to picture anything else, because we're like, well, everything I'm doing in my day is essential. You know, there's no room. There's nothing for me to take out. And my first piece of advice is to always to figure, not, don't look at the how yet. Instead, focus on the why. You know, and that for me personally, that meant sitting down and I wrote my own eulogy probably 2 years after I started the whole process of slowing down. And that formed the basis of my why. Why I was slowing down, why I had chosen to make all of these changes, excuse me. And once I figured out why, then it started to become simpler, not necessarily easier, but simpler to make choices and changes that would allow me to start slowing down. So my advice for someone who's in the thick of life, they want to slow down, but they don't know that they can, they don't see how they can, is to sit down with a piece of paper and think about what you stand to gain by slowing down. And that's going to be different for everyone. Maybe it's, you know, 30 minutes a day for you to take a walk, or an hour in the evening to spend with your family, or, you know, whatever it may be. Make it as personal and practical and applicable to your life as possible, and then use that as your motivation going forward. Because I think otherwise we get caught up in making all of these changes or trying to make these changes simply because someone on the internet told us to. You know, like, we kind of become enwrapped with this idea of slowing down or minimalism or simplicity or whatever it may be. And we know deep down that's the answer. But instead of figuring out why we personally want to do it, we look at what the bloggers do or what the Instagram people do or what the, you know, the podcasters, the authors do. And we use that as a blueprint. And sometimes that's a great place to start, but until we figure out why we want to do it ourselves, it's always going to end up feeling like, you know, another to-do. Whereas when you figure out why you want to do it, it's a choice. And you say, I'm choosing to do this because I'm working towards this thing that I want to gain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I think the why always seems like, it feels like everything in life always comes back to a why.
Yeah.
You know, it's like even like in business, I mean, like everything, like, you know, if you're like, even from a business perspective, like your mission statement, like, why do you do what you do? Like, why did you want to write this book? Why do you want to do slow living? It's always the why that's right. Like that force.
Yeah. And that's exactly right. Because it drives change, or it drives action, or it drives, you know, forming a habit or whatever it may be, but it's that kind of foundation. And what I found, once I had my why in place, anytime I was faced with, you know, a difficult decision or an uncomfortable conversation, or having to tell someone no, or, you know, choosing to say yes to something, whatever it may be, I could always refer back to that why and ask myself, is this getting me closer to the kind of life I want to live, or is it taking me further away? And often that was enough of a motivator to, you know, to make the choice that was right long term, even if it wasn't the simplest or the easiest to make in the short term.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, okay, with all things slow living, it's, you know, we've been talking a lot about this idea of like, the keeping up with the Joneses, the shoulding, comparisons, things that just always seem to creep in when we're trying to make big changes in our lives, especially like, you know, we talk about like when you had your kind of like aha moment, like we have these moments where we're like, something has to change. I want to change my life. But then we have all these things come in, like the keeping up with the Joneses idea. You even start the book saying that, like, you're like, I'm done keeping up with the Joneses. You like write a letter to them and they're done. It's super cute and relatable. But then what I thought was so interesting, and this like switches gears a little bit, but you say about how like this idea of minimalism and this idea of how that's kind of taken on its own thing. And it's often tied to simple living. And yet you're like, well, they're not necessarily interchangeable. Like, it can be an aspect of it and they complement each other. But I like that you said that there's a slippery slope of achieving quote unquote minimalism or, you know, like, and it's like all of a sudden, what did we just do? We just should all over that.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit? Cause I think that's very vital for people to hear. When they're like, well, okay, so I'm going to do this spacious living thing, this slow living, I'm going to clear out my whole house and like, you know, whatever. And then it's like, it just goes too far.
Yeah. And it does. And that was definitely my experience. I mean, so I started this entire process of slowing down and simplifying with decluttering my house because I knew that I needed to make changes and create space in my life. But I mean, my mental health was just terrible at the time. So had you said, Brooke, sit down and meditate, I think that my head would have exploded. I could not fathom that kind of self-reflection. But what I could do, what I thought I could manage, was decluttering. And that's where I started. So for the first 12 months or so, I decluttered pretty hardcore. But the thing that I did was count the amount of items that I was letting go of. And that for a while was a really great motivator. And after about a year, I decluttered over 20,000 things from our house. Mm. And that was great. And it felt great. And I really had created change and brought in new energy and created space in our home, which coincidentally also started to create space in my head. But what then I found was that I had become kind of wrapped up in this idea of minimalism. And you'd see online people who lived with 100 items or less, people who lived out of a backpack permanently, people who had packed up all their belongings and put it in storage and only got out the bare necessities as they needed them. And all of which are, there's nothing wrong with any of that. But as mom of two kids living in a suburban house, that wasn't my life. That wasn't my reality. But I found myself comparing my situation to that. And I started shooting everywhere. I should do better. I should have less stuff. We should sell our house and go and live in a tiny home, or, you know, whatever ideal I had kind of tried to compare myself to at the time. And I realized that it was actually going against the core of minimalism or simplicity, which is creating space for the things that matter, not creating space in order to feel smug about how few things we own. And it's like, it's a means to an end for me. And I had lost sight of that for a while. So I think that's an important thing to keep in mind too. If you are looking to create space, physical, emotional space, don't get caught up in the doing and forget to enjoy the benefits and the space that you do create. Because I think it's a slippery slope from doing the work from finding enough to convincing ourselves that if we just work a little harder, it'll be a little better, because that's a slope that's really hard to climb back up from. Because mm-hmm. then we do the little bit that we think we should do, and we're like, oh, that's better. We should do a little bit more, because then I'll feel incrementally better again. And again, it's just the same cycle. You get to the next step thinking you'll be happy, and then you realize there's another step and another step and another step. So it's about also finding contentment with where you are now, regardless of whether that is exactly as you envisaged or not. And I really, really, what it's about is letting go of expectations. I've come to realize that having expectations about things is to invite suffering into our hearts, because either way, the expectations aren't necessarily going to measure up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we do always seem to find a way to somehow bring a judgment into something really good. Like, I don't know, as humans, we just find a way to do that. And I think it's just that we're very hardwired, it seems, almost for comparison. I think it's something to do with, I've been reading a lot about the brain, actually, and I think it has something to do with like survival of the fittest or something. I don't know fully. I'm not a scientist, but it seems like we always somehow come back to, am I doing better than that person? Or am I doing minimalism better than that person? Or, you know, like you said, okay, well then I should live tiny. I should have a capsule wardrobe, like all these things, which are really cool and they sound awesome, and go for it if you feel so called. It's just, again, like you said, there's that like balance and slippery slope of, you know, where do we take that? And then do we suck all the joy out of the product?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I think the other thing that I realized is that it's a process, right? We can't go from A to Z. Mm-hmm. We can't go from, I certainly couldn't go from a cluttered house where we had just cupboards crammed full of stuff and double car garage full of boxes. You know, I couldn't go from that to a calm, spacious, minimalistic house in a weekend. And I think that we are definitely wired for immediate gratification. So learning that it was going to be a process, and a slow, steady process rather than an exciting kind of one, took a bit of getting used to. Mm-hmm. Because I, you know, and then I would declutter and I would feel good about it. But what I had to learn to do was to then just sit with what I had done and the space that I had created and feel like that was enough. And then if I felt called to make more changes a month or two down the track, I would, and that's fine. But what I would then discover is that I had shifted, and my idea of enough, or my idea of what constituted clutter, had shifted in that couple of months. But I needed that time to make that shift happen. You know, it wasn't something I could force.
Right.
So I also think that letting go of the idea of immediate gratification, I mean, it's slow for a reason, right? It's slow is about the pace at which we can, you know, mindfully tap into life, but also the process of slowing down is a slow one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. And again, it's like the expectation, like just enjoy the process, be in the process. Yeah, exactly. I really like that. Do you find that, so what you said, like, for example, you said you can't just go from, like, it's unrealistic, let's say, to think I'm going to go from, you know, normal size house that has normal, you know, like 2-car garage filled with stuff, and then I'm just gonna all of a sudden like go live in a tiny house or something like that, and
right,
like little to no belongings, really. You know, that's not necessarily realistic. Again, that balance idea. So, do you think that in that same token, like that people, there's like an entry point with slow living. Like you said, if I would have tried to sit down and all of a sudden meditate for an hour a day, it would have been like a catastrophe. Like right. It wouldn't have worked. And I'd have been like, screw this. I'm not doing this slow living crap. Like not working, not for me.
Yeah.
I like this. I love the conversation of an entry point. It's like a gateway drug or something, like something that gets you your foot in the door where you could kind of start to feel it out and you're like, okay. So like for you, you were like, okay, I'm going to start to do the decluttering. I find that it's either the house for like external space, because it starts to lead to that feeling of internal space when we can kind of get the chaos around us in check. But I also think, and I'm curious what you think, I'm also a yoga teacher, and right. movement is really important to me. Mm-hmm. And I often find, and I've said the same thing to some of my clients, is that say you're having a really rough day, and the thought of you're like, I need to make some space. I feel really sitting down and meditating. If you're not a practice, you know, meditation person, that might feel like the worst thing.
Right.
And be really hard. And you're like, I can't, my mind is walking away from me. Like I can't keep calling it back. Like I'm getting frustrated. I'm getting pissed. I always like to say like the body also is like an access point to internal space by moving. Mm-hmm. I'm curious what you think about that, because I know you're so into the decluttering. What's your opinion on, this is honestly just off the top of my head here, because I'm a yoga instructor, but movement is a part of my life, like a huge part. What's your idea on like the body and creating that sense of slowing down or spaciousness through movement?
Yeah, I think that it's a huge connection. It's one that I wish I had tapped into earlier, to be honest. But over the past few years, I've always kind of dipped my toe into yoga. But over the past few years, I've really started to practice with intention. And the thing that never fails to amaze me and inspire me is how I feel after I've spent even 5 minutes on my mat. And it doesn't have to be anything extraordinary. It can just be sun salutations or something like that. It always makes a change to my energy, into my headspace, into my heart space. And what I discovered, going back to your very first question about how I managed to find slow on the book tour, mm-hmm. even something as simple as maybe 10 deep breaths, standing up, you know, raising my arms up over my head and bringing my palms together and bring them down, 10 breaths like that, and then 3 lion's breaths at the end. Mm-hmm. That was enough to shift that blockage or that frustration or that bad day, or, you know, just enough space to start to again, incrementally angle myself towards the kind of choices I want to make. So I think it's enormous. Back in March, my husband and I, we often do these slow experiments that sort of run for a month, and they tap into some element of slow living. And in March, we did a 30 days of nature experiment. So we committed to spending 60 minutes in nature every day for the month of March. And that almost always involved us just going for a walk in the forest. We were staying in a town in BC at the time. We had all these beautiful forest trails nearby. And even just moving gently like that made such a difference to my creativity and to my energy and to, again, the kind of parent I was for the rest of the day and the kind of partner I was. So I think it's enormous. Mm-hmm. And I think that I love the idea of an entry point. I really do, because for a lot of people, they come to the realization that they want to slow down or they need to slow down because they reach a crisis. You know, a health crisis or a mental health crisis or relationships or finances or work. And, you know, they feel like they've reached breaking point. What I want to do is to start encouraging people to not wait till they get to that crisis point in order to slow down. And I think the idea of having an entry point or a variety of entry points is a beautiful way of doing that. You know, tap into what feels intuitively aligned with that person where they're at, and just use that. You know, it could be yoga, it could be breathing, it could be mindfulness, it could be decluttering, it could be changing the food we eat, it could just be choosing to get up 10 minutes earlier and sit in the quiet for those 10 minutes, whatever it is. But I'm sure you've found the same thing. One discovery or one element of spaciousness so often leads us to another, you know, and it's this process. We can't see 10 steps ahead of us, but maybe we can see the next right thing. We can see the next step to take. And I think once we're heading towards something, taking that next step feels less scary or less unknown, but it's, you know, it's that entry point that I think is the key.
Yeah. You know, as soon as you just said that, it reminded me of how people say, when you make good food choices, you're more often to make better choices throughout the day. You know, you hear people say right. that.
Yeah.
You make a slow, mindful, you know, decision to be intentional. You're more likely to keep doing that throughout the day because it feels good.
Exactly. And you start to reap the benefits. You know, you might be, again, like me, less inclined to anger. You know, that was one of the biggest things that I struggled with. I had a terrible temper and I had no margin between, you know, a situation and reaction. There was nothing because I was crammed completely full. I had nowhere to expand in a, you know, constructive kind of way. If I had to expand, I just expanded outwards loudly, you know. But by creating that small amount of space, it then allowed me to react more positively. And that then shifted the way that I interacted with my husband. And it meant that I was a less reactive parent, and it meant that my kids were happier, and so on and so on and so on, you know. And it's just finding that one in that's a good starting point for us.
Absolutely. So maybe people that are listening to this could be thinking like, what's my entry point? What's my entry point to this? Is it decluttering? Yeah. Is it yoga? Is it breath? Like, what is it? I'm sure like we all have a different way that we can get into this. We can step into this. Obviously, you know, Brooke's book will help you do that a lot. Small plug.
Thank you.
But especially with the new year, I know that people are just going to be like, yes, let's do it. But you know, like you said, don't shoot on it. Don't create expectations. Enjoy the process. It's not about the destination. Like all these things you hear about all the time that sounds so corny, and yet they're not corny at all because they're so darn true.
Exactly. So there's one little mantra that I return to every time I feel like, you know, and like you have busy seasons in life. There's no shame in that. You know, even someone who has written books on slow living, and who advocates for a slower life. I have busy periods and I used to feel bad about that. I used to feel like, again, I shouldn't have busy periods because of the things that I talk about in my work. Well, again, that's unrealistic. There are expectations that no one can live up to. So, you know, you remove that expectation of what it should look like. But every time I feel like I have these busier periods, James Clear once wrote, reduce the scope and stick to the schedule about anything. So I think he was talking specifically about exercise, how to encourage and create a habit of daily exercise. Mm-hmm. He's like, there'll be days where the meeting runs long or the kids are sick. He said that happens. But instead of just giving it up completely for the day, reduce the scope. You know, it doesn't have to be an hour long run. It could be a 5-minute stroll around the block and then stick to the schedule. And I find myself thinking about that a lot. Because I think it's really solid advice for those times where things get full and they get busy to just tap into one non-negotiable and use that. Don't use it as a stick to beat yourself with. Just use it as your grounding point in slowness, regardless of what else is happening.
Oh, I dig that. Yeah, that's a really good one. That's good. Okay, I got one last question for you here, and then I'm going to ask you some funner. Is that a word? More fun.
I like funner.
Oh, jeez. I have one last question, and then I'm going to ask you some rapid-fire questions that are just random, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
So my last question for you, this is a question that I ask absolutely everyone who's on the show, and that's because this is the self-care spotlights. What does self-care mean to you?
Self-care means giving myself time. And typically for me, it looks like time to myself in the mornings. Like I said, sometimes that's 5 minutes, sometimes it's 10 minutes with my son sitting on my lap. But usually it is some sort of self-care ritual in the morning. So be it slow, deep breathing, be it 10 minutes of yoga, be it some meditation, journaling, sitting with a coffee. When I have that, I feel like that's what I need to fill my cup up on the daily. You know, there are things that I do in addition to that that kind of serve a deeper purpose. But daily, it looks like turning up for myself and not feeling guilty about it, not feeling like I'm being self-centered. I'm finally, at 36 years old, I know enough to know that that's actually going to make me a better person to be around by just having that time in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm a really big fan of the morning.
Me too.
Huge, huge. I call it morning space making. And it's like essential for me. I have to do something for myself when I wake up, even if it's like you said, for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm like, I have to, I cannot just jump out of bed and just start doing things for other people or checking the social media. Because
right.
It's just, so I talk about setting you up for like a feeling of like rushed and like
heaviness.
Yes. And that's mm-hmm. opposite of space.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's what I used to do. I used to wake up with my phone next to my bed. And before I knew it, you know, muscle memory kicks in and you're on Instagram. And then you're like, well, just check my emails. And then you're like, what else is happening in the world? And 30 minutes have gone and my head is full and my heart is full and I feel heavy and overwhelmed and I'm not even out of bed yet. You know, mm-hmm. that's kind of the cruelest way to start the day for me.
Yeah. So it's, yeah. That's a good way to put it. The cruelest way. Oh, yeah.
And that's what it feels like. It feels like it's self-sabotage, you know, because I know. Much like it sounds like you're the same. I know when I'm my best self is when I give myself that space in the morning, but by filling it immediately before I've even had time to switch my brain on, it never ends well. And they're the days that I would snap. They're the days that buffer that I worked so hard to create was full before I even got up, you know, before I even woke up completely.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Okay. Let's do some rapid fire questions, shall we?
Okay. I'm not great at rapid fire, as you may have sensed, but I would try my best.
They're just for fun. Okay. What did you have for breakfast?
I haven't had breakfast yet, but I have had my dandelion, my dandy blend. I'm going off coffee at the moment, so I've had a cup of dandy blend.
What's dandy? Is that just dandelion root tea?
Yeah, I think so. It's a combination. My acupuncturist suggested it to me. It's really good. And I feel like I'm having a coffee without any of the, you know, crazy side effects that it was right. starting to give me.
Yeah, I love dandelion root tea. So I wonder if it tastes like that. I love that. And it's really good for detoxing the liver.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I'm seeing an acupuncturist at the moment a couple of times a week. And yeah, that's something we're working on. So it's so far so good.
Mm-hmm. It tastes like kind of like earthy. I don't know. It's really good. I actually have some in my cupboard right now. Like I had it last night. I love dandelion root tea. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Finish the sentence. I crave more.
Good conversations, like deep conversations.
I hope this fit the bill.
It absolutely did. Yeah. And I said to you before we recorded how excited I was to get back into podcast recording for this exact reason. Over the past few months, I've done a lot of media, you know, like 4 minute TV spots or 5 minute radio grabs. And I'm like, it's not enough. I just want to dive in.
Mm-hmm. That connection, like real. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm making space for
slow. Which is a funny thing to say, but the last few months, again, have not been slow. And November and December are all about making space for those things that fill us up on a deeper level. You know, it's fine to have those 5 or 10 minutes in the morning, but my project over November, December is to really fill back up those areas that I felt like have been depleted over the past few months.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I told you, that's why we're not doing the podcast in December. You know, I had like a real moment with myself where I was like, Alyssa, no.
And it's like, I guess that's a you know, a conversation I have to have with myself every 6 months, 12 months, saying you cannot be all things to all people all the time, you know? And I think it's still kind of reminding myself of that, taking my ego out of the picture and saying, hey, just cool it.
Right. And like you said, going back, I had to go back to my why. I'm like,
right,
this, okay, wait a minute. This has nothing to do with, like, this is counterintuitive to my why.
Exactly.
It's counterintuitive to space. If it's holiday, Christmas is one of my favorite times of the year. You know, like, yeah, just chill. Just chill, Alyssa. Just chill. Okay. When it comes to self-care, I could be better at?
Not apologizing for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I've carved out, I think I've finally got my family to understand how much my mornings mean to me. But if I, again, go and do those things that are a deeper filling of, you know, of the well, I still sometimes feel like that time could be better spent doing something else, usually something for someone else.
Right.
So it's again, not being apologetic for it.
Right. Yeah, I've had a lot of recent conversations on the podcast, and people keep saying terms like positively selfish.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, that's it. It's like, why is selfish negative? Maybe it's not negative. Maybe we just have made it negative. Maybe there's a way to really be healthy and selfish.
Yeah, exactly. And I wrote about that briefly in the book, how this idea of being self-centered growing up was always such a bad thing. Like, you know, in Australia, people say like, oh, she loves herself. Like, it's a terrible thing to love oneself. You know, that means that you're kind of uppity or
a snob. Yes, you were just talking about this on the podcast.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And kind of having to completely reframe what self-love is has been really interesting for me. And I think it's an ongoing conversation personally, but also in the wider community where people still hear the phrase self-love or self-care and they're like, oh, okay, sure. And I think that if we don't have love for ourselves, then we cannot actually turn around and give love freely to others. And that's been like something that I have had to painfully dig into myself, particularly as I've become a parent, but even as my relationship with Ben has strengthened and deepened, figuring out why I've found it so difficult to have that self-love and that self-respect. And then to see that when I give it to myself and I'm able to give it to myself, the impact that it has elsewhere. So while it might feel self-centered, it's actually, yes, self-centered, but also in order to help us serve other people and to give freely, we need it. You know, it's not actually a negotiable.
I just thought of something really good. When I am self-centered, I am centered in myself.
Right. Exactly. That's beautiful.
I need to make it a t-shirt.
You should. Please do.
As you said that, I was like, oh, light bulb.
Right. Like self-centered, you know, it's not a derogatory thing.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Okay. Last rapid fire question. Milk chocolate or dark chocolate or not a chocolate person?
Oh, dark chocolate all the way.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. Okay. We've come to the point now in the podcast where I would love for you to be able to please tell everybody, where can they connect with you? Where can they find your podcast and where can they get this wonderful book?
So the best place to connect with me is at slowyourhome.com. That's where the podcast lives. That's where you can find links to the books and also to my Instagram. I have wrapped up. I don't use Facebook anymore and I don't use Twitter anymore. So Instagram's the only social media channel that you'll find me on. But yeah, slowyourhome.com is my home on the internet. And I'd love you to pop by and say hello.
Yes. I actually think it's pretty cool that you said you're not on Facebook or Twitter.
Yes. Yeah. It was, you know what?
Facebook?
Sorry?
You let go of Facebook?
Yes, only very recently, but it's a change that I've been thinking on for quite some time. And it just felt like the right time. You know, when And I mean, it's tricky as you run a business and you go where people are, right? And people are on Facebook. But the thing that I realized was it wasn't only a time suck, but it was also an energetic vampire. I never felt good when I was on there. I don't use it personally. I think I still have a profile, but I couldn't tell you the last time I updated it or anything like that. And it's just not where I feel I can connect with people. So I made the decision before the book tour, but obviously for promotional reasons and whatnot, I needed to keep it around until the end of the year. But yeah, that's wound up. And it's fine. I mean, I just encourage people to join my mailing list. I email in a much more connected kind of way every week, and I feel like I'm able to better communicate mm-hmm. with people. And I know that people who want to hear from me actually get to hear from me. So in the end, it's, you know, energy versus result. Yeah, and I don't miss it at all.
I was just like, I'm really curious. I had to ask about that because, well, like, I love Instagram the most of all of them. And yet, like you said, as a business person, you're like, well, I want to go where people are. So right. I just, that was probably just my curiosity.
Yeah, no, it's, and it, people still think that I'm a bit mad for doing it, but look, in the end,
slow.
Exactly.
Well, Brooke, thank you so very much for taking time out of, you know, your life as you've been winding down and going back into slow mode. I, again, really appreciate you being here. I really love what you put into the world. It's so inspiring to me. And I just really appreciate that you're here. So thank you again.
No, thank you for having me, Alyssa. It was awesome. And thank you for giving me one of those deep conversations that I've been craving. Really loved it.
You are so welcome. Honestly, the pleasure was all mine. I would be lying if I said I wasn't so excited to talk to you. I was so excited to talk to you.
No, it was awesome. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Well, guys, that is a wrap. So here's some questions that I would love for you to be able to maybe take to your journal and think about coming off of this conversation. I know that this conversation is going to spark a lot of us into thinking, I am so ready for this slow living, spacious living, hells to the yes, let's do it. So here's some jumping off points that based on the conversation, I think would be really good places to start. Like Brooke said and writes about in her book, what's your why? Really, what would be your why? Why are you wanting to start slow living, spacious living, what's going to be your roots that you can come back to whenever you're not sure if you should make a decision, if you should say yes or no, or if you start to waver and think, oh, I can't do this anymore. Like, it's just, this is hard. Like, I keep wanting to hustle. What are you going to come back to in those moments when you find that you're spiraling? What's your why? What's going to bring you back home? What's going to root you? Journaling about that, I think, will be imperative to having a successful experience within this lifestyle. Also, what's your entry point? You know, is it starting with decluttering your house one room at a time and going around and just one room at a time getting rid of things and decluttering, like that was Brooke's main entry, you know, first entry point? Is it movement? You know, we talked about movement. I brought that up as a yoga teacher. It's so important to me. Maybe for you, it's movement. It's doing yoga more. It's doing breath work. It's going on walks in nature, like Brooke talked about. Maybe challenge yourself to get outside every single day, you know, weather permitting, or at least trying to, even if it's 5 minutes, to take some, you know, breaths of fresh air, somehow moving your body. Maybe that for you is going to be a more easier entry point. If you're someone like me who finds movement just so intuitive, then maybe you'll get that internal spacious feeling, which will extend into your outer world and your inner world and all of your choices. So again, what's your entry point? And with that all being said, we kept talking about this idea of letting go of shoulds, letting go of expectations, and just allowing the process to happen, just enjoying the process instead of making it a keeping up with the Joneses, even though that's trying what we're trying to walk away from. Instead of saying you have to be the best minimalist or you have to do slow living the perfect way or put it on your to-do list as like another item, let's not. Let's stop with the shoulding. Let's stop with the expectations and just allow and be, which is truly what this practice is all about. It is about intentionality and mindfulness and space and slow. Give yourself permission, as Brooke says, to slow down. Be sure to snag this book by clicking the link in the show notes here, and you'll be able to find it on our homepage to shop and start your year off with space and slowness. If you love this episode, you could also leave us a review on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review, and it would mean so much to me to reach other wonderful people like you. Have a wonderful rest of your day, and I'll talk to you soon.